This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe, and I'm honored to be the new host of this program. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to encourage everyone listening to participate in our conversations by connecting with us on social media. You can find us at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. There's a lot to unpack today as we look into what's been happening when it comes to underrepresented groups in state government, from Black lawmakers being booed by some of their Republican counterparts at the State House, to Asian Americans seeing an uptick in harassment and discrimination, to a lack of proper resources for undocumented immigrants. There's a common theme that continues to come up. Why isn't there more support? And why isn't there more representation? With us today are three Indiana leaders working to enact change. We have Catherine Chi, organizer for the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum, or NAPOF, the Indiana chapter. Marshawn Wally, public policy director for the African American Coalition of Indianapolis. And Elise Schrock is the president of the Indiana Democratic Latino Caucus. Thank you all so much for joining us today. And before we get started, I think it's important to lay out some context with recent events. We have some audio from a House debate last month where things got heated. Black legislators were being booed while trying to share why House Bill 1367 came off as discriminatory. That bill proposes allowing students in St. Joseph Township to leave South Bend Community Schools and go to a smaller, less diverse school in another district. So this is Representative Gregory Porter. Let's take a listen.
You're recognized to speak on the bill, Representative.
Thank you. I'll be very brief because I know there's a line. This is definitely a slippery slope. However, you know, here we go again. Discrimination and segregation, the things like that is excuse me, I have a right. Mr. Speaker, we're going to stop my remarks.
Can all
before,
the members just
no,
take
it's
a
not,
deep
no,
breath.
It's go right ahead, impugning me as a legislator to say what I feel and what I read. So anybody who wants to address me after I get off this mic, you may address me. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
So I want to kind of open this up to everybody, whoever wants to start first. What are your thoughts when you hear something like this? Is it shocking or is this just business as usual?
For me, I refuse to accept this as business as usual. And so it is shocking, it is appalling that a legislator does not have the ability to raise the issue of discriminatory practices or bills that might create racial disparities or racial inequities in the General Assembly. That should be very much a part of the public policy process. And for that, that to be the reaction of the General Assembly is problematic on a variety of levels.
Now, Marshawn, I know that after this incident, the Black Legislative Caucus called for mandatory racial equity and implicit bias training for members of the State House. Has this been asked for before, or is this the first time that this has come up?
I believe that this has been asked for before when there have been prior incidents by one or two legislators. I know that the General Assembly has sexual harassment training. This implicit bias training or cultural competency training, it's long overdue. It's something that just needs to happen.
For any of our individuals on the panel today, do you think that implicit bias training and things like this will have an impact if it does get enacted?
I mean, I would hope it would, but I think, you know, listening back to that audio and then thinking back to when Representative Vernon Smith, shortly after Representative Porter was done speaking, also got up. He shared very personal stories about how he had dealt with racism throughout his educational career, throughout his childhood. And I think that for lawmakers and people in power to hear that and their first reaction not be to empathize with just basic human dignity and the human experience speaks to a much larger issue, especially in our country, where when we hear words like segregation, when we hear words like racism, there is this just immediate defensiveness rather than self-reflection. And I would hope that the way that this type of implicit bias training is conducted allows for that very important personal reflection and unlearning and breaking down of ways that the largely white, largely male, largely cisgender, largely hetero population at the Indiana General Assembly can identify ways that they have benefited from their privilege, unpack that, unlearn, and then empathize with fellow humans that deserve respect and love and dignity and who are their colleagues.
Mm-hmm. Catherine, what about you? What was your reaction when you heard that clip?
I'm certainly disappointed, but not surprised at all. And because, you know, this isn't something that, I mean, it's sad that, you know, our lawmakers have to deal with this because they're out there representing us, trying to make our communities better. But I also know that this type of behavior also happens in other types of workplace. So, I mean, for this type of training to not have ever happened for people representing all sorts of people in the state house, I think it's unacceptable. And I think it's time that people get trained.
Now, Marshawn, the Black Legislative Caucus is planning to hold some call to action days. Can you tell us a little bit more about what exactly that is?
So essentially what they did is they held call to action days for the last couple of weeks, actually. And the point of that was to basically demonstrate the communities, the larger communities, concern about not only what happened to the Black Legislative Caucus, but then also the tone of the legislative session. The fact that there were a number of bills that seemed to have racial undertones that were going to create racial inequities and racial disparities, and to really just kind of speak to the fact that our community was not going to be silenced. And so the call to action was to show up, to be present, to voice our concerns. And I think we did that, and we were pretty successful in making sure that the leadership heard us. In fact, we know that the leadership heard us.
Elise, as a member of the, as the head of the Democratic Latino Caucus, what was the response to this type of an incident? Is this something that you've had to deal with a lot?
Well, I think our work is in the Latino Caucus attempts, at least. I would hope people see that we try to be very intersectional in our work. And that is, you know, that is important, that when something happens like this to the Black community, that we are showing up. And we did show up to those days of action because we are all Hoosiers benefit when our legislators are treated with respect, when Black communities are treated with respect, when the Asian American Pacific Islander community is treated with respect, and not just that, has access to the actual resources that we all need to succeed and have an opportunity to succeed. So, you know, the Latino movement, and even back when you think to, you know, one of the great mothers of our work, Dolores Huerta, when you think back to the farm workers movement, you know, they were gaining traction with their strikes and with their organizing, and they stopped some of their work in the community to make sure that they were also pulling up alongside the Filipino American farm workers organizing. And they were part of the Black community's civil rights calls to action. So when we do our work, yes, we are the voice of our community, but it is so important that we are working alongside and along with and supporting all the other communities in our state.
Yeah. And so what I'm hearing here is that there's definitely a need for this intersectional organizing where different groups can work together for the same goal. And has any of that happened already? I'm sure there have been efforts. I don't know, Catherine, if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So just jumping into something that my organization, NAPOF Indiana Chapter, has been very busy with is this petition that we launched on March 1st. And we are respectfully asking Governor Holcomb to do three things. One, publicly recognize and condemn anti-Asian hostility. And number two, implement procedures and programs to support AAPI communities without escalating law enforcement. And three, establish a statewide advisory committee for AAPIs. And through the process of getting signatures for our petition and getting co-sponsors for our petition, we were able to start establishing relationships with the various organizations in the state. And I will say that Elisa's organization was one of the first organizations to sign on as the Indiana Latino Democratic Caucus. They co-sponsored, and I was able to get Representative Cherish Prior to sign this petition as well. And we have a number of other organizations who signed, such as the Indiana Muslim Advocacy Network. So we just really appreciate when different organizations stand with us on this.
Absolutely. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with leaders of Indiana organizations working to make changes in state government when it comes to equity, inclusion, and representation. Before we head to the break, Catherine, can you give us a quick rundown of NAPOF and what exactly this organization represents?
Sure. So NAPOF stands for National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. And we're the Indiana chapter. We were established. We're fairly new. We were officially chartered in April 2020. And we're a community of women, girls, and allies of all genders and ages, building a sense of belonging and lifting the voices of Asian, Asian American, and Pacific Islander women and girls in Indiana. And we aim to provide resources to support each other and take action on issues affecting Asian American and Pacific Islander Hoosiers.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing. If you have questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We'll be back with our guests after a quick break. So get yourself a cup of coffee or get a snack, and we'll be right back in 90 seconds. I'm Miriam Sobe, and this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about what's being done to strengthen the voice of underrepresented organizations and individuals in state government. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. You can also send us a message through our free smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it into the show. So before the break, we delved a little bit into NAPOF to learn a little bit more about that. We are joined with three guests this afternoon. Catherine Shi is an organizer for the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. Marshawn Wally is the public policy director for the African American Coalition of Indianapolis. And Elise Schrock is the president of the Indiana Democratic Latino Caucus. Elise, can you tell us a little bit about the caucus? I mean, we hear about all these different caucuses in state government. And for those who are just maybe new to this and aren't sure what this means, can you give us a little rundown?
Yeah, the Indiana Democratic Latino Caucus is an arm of the Democratic Party that aims to empower and uplift Hispanic and Latino Hoosiers across our state. And we really try to be a voice that encourages folks to run for office, lift them up into leadership opportunities, whether it is political or even just a boardroom or a corner office or a board table. It's really important that we have that representation. So we do that outreach and that outer work, but we also aim to be a voice for our community within the Democratic Party, because that is needed. We do exist outside of election season. and that's a challenge. That's a real barrier that we have to overcome. And we have to do that all together as a larger community and electorate body. But we really just try to organize, empower Hispanic and Latino Hoosiers to use the voice that they have.
Do you find that in the Latino community, people are hesitant to get involved in politics, and maybe well, your organization or your caucus would give them more of an opportunity?
Sure. I think our representation, and kind of taking off my, you know, Democratic Party hat, our representation everywhere is somewhat lacking, but that doesn't mean we aren't here in large numbers and we aren't doing incredibly valuable organizing work. When you think of the state house, and even when you think of political parties, the rules, the procedure, the protocol that was created was largely created without many of us in mind. So breaking into that can be intimidating. There are specific barriers for our community, and that goes beyond just language access. So having a group like ours that can make sure that we are speaking in one voice in all of these areas of process and policy and procedure, to make sure that every organization is being open and welcoming and accessible, is a large part of what we do, and it is needed, because these can be intimidating spaces to show up at for a number of reasons.
Thank you so much. So, Marshawn, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the African American Coalition of Indianapolis. What kind of work do you do, and what are some of the changes you're hoping to enact within the State House?
Yeah, so thanks so much for asking. So the African American Coalition of Indianapolis has been around for over 20 years. For most of our history, we've been involved in trying to get African Americans involved in the political process through voter registration. We've also hosted forums, gubernatorial forums, senatorial forums. More recently, in the last municipal elections, we held the first municipal debate on a Black agenda. And so part of what you'll see from us are sometimes statements where we're weighing in on issues based on information and data that we have. We are also a accountability partner, I guess you'd say, for different agencies, including the police department, which we meet with probably quarterly to just address different issues. Right now, we're also engaged in the work of really a $100 million effort to understand the priorities of the African-American community and to use resources that we received from the Lilly Endowment to really renew the quality of life for African-Americans in Indianapolis. So our activities are really up, broad ranging, mostly focused on public policy, and very active right now.
So I want to ask you, similar to what I asked Elise, like, is there distrust in the community when it comes to getting involved in politics? You know, I think sometimes there's this idea that, you know, people will become engaged and want to vote and make changes, but there is still a level of distrust. How do we overcome that?
Yeah, so with respect to the level of distrust, I think what you see in the African-American community is really concerned about integrity on, like, both political parties, to be perfectly honest with you. When you say you're going to do something, you campaign on something, and then that doesn't happen, and our life doesn't change, you know, and you ask us to vote. Mm-hmm. So what we've decided to do, instead of being, I guess, defeated by that, is to just really engage and to raise our level of engagement. And we're trying to demonstrate leadership by going to the General Assembly, working with elected officials on both sides of the aisle, and really pressing for our issues to try to be the leadership that we want to see and drive the changes that we want to see. I think leadership, you know, demands optimism. And so we remain optimistic despite, I guess, all evidence to the contrary in certain instances.
Right, right. Well, Catherine, on a similar note, you know, you're representing NAPOF. What does this organization hope to accomplish?
So right now, I could kind of, just listening to Elise and Marshawn speak about, you know, the distrust, and maybe perhaps some of the people in their community may not want to be involved. You know, through this organizing work that we've been doing with NAPOF, what we've been seeing is there's a really fragment, like our community is very fragmented because we AAPIs are the minority group that represents the most ethnicities. So you'll oftentimes in one big community, you'll see, okay, there's you know, maybe five or six different Chinese American organizations or Taiwanese American organizations. You'll see a couple Filipino American organizations. The Korean American organizations. And what we've discovered is we're not talking to each other, and we don't know what some of our issues are right now because we're not talking to each other. And there's going to be, when we start bringing everybody to the table, we're going to find a lot of similarities, and we will be able to bring that, you know, to the governor or the legislators and ask for some accountability or some, you know, advocate for what our needs are. So I'm looking forward to the next few years of building some sort of infrastructure where we can bring everybody to the table. And we're also, we've been keeping an eye on what's been going on in Georgia and the success that they've had in the last election and the runoff election, because what I'm sure everyone has been hearing is, you know, there was an increase in the AAPI voting bloc. And we saw that, you know, campaigns were talking to them directly and asking them what their issues are and are listening to them. And that's what we're hoping for in Indiana.
Well, if you're just joining us, we are speaking about bringing voices of underrepresented into the state government and making changes on the state government level. You know, Catherine, you mentioned earlier about this petition that you delivered to the governor. Is it symbolic, or do you really hope that something will come out of that? I know sometimes these are sort of symbolic efforts, but how confident are you that some action will be taken?
I'm really hoping that the governor will take some action on this. And I certainly don't want this to be just a symbolic act. We really need action. We are desperate for him to come out and condemn this anti-Asian hostility, because our community is hurt right now. And I will say, you know, we delivered this petition on Thursday. So we're giving him a few days to respond, and we're really hoping to hear some good news and work with him. And then, you know, our leaders will decide on some next steps, and, you know, potentially we may need an escalation plan if we don't hear from him. But for now, you know, we're really hoping, you know, for the best.
For folks who may not know what you're talking about, can you elaborate a little bit about what's been happening in the Asian American community?
Sure. So since March of 2020, since the beginning of the pandemic, Asian Americans have been scapegoated for this pandemic because of, you know, certain rhetoric that politicians have been using. And since March 2020, there had been 3,000 anti-Asian hate incidents that had been reported. However, I will say that this 3,000 incidents, that is underreported. It's we know that it's not often that people will. This number is underreported. So, in our petition, we highlighted four specific hate incidents that had happened in Indiana, and we know that there's probably more out there, but people don't know where to go. People may not be reporting it because, again, they don't know where to go, or they're afraid to report it because of their immigration status. So at this point, we just really need leadership to come out and talk about this and bring this to light and condemn this kind of behavior.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I would love to open this, you know, all of you can feel free to jump in for any of these questions. When organizations want to get things done and you put out petitions or maybe have something, some other kind of call to action, you know, how often is it that you see some kind of response from state government? And, you know, it'd just be interesting to hear different experiences.
Yeah, so with the AACI, this is really our first true escalation at the state government level in a systemic fashion. I mean, we've done things off and on throughout the 20 years, but this was the first time that we, for example, held an editorial board with the Indy Star, and then we developed an agenda, and then we said we were going to have a silent protest, and then we had protests for a whole week. So we've really escalated our efforts. We're seeing some positive developments within the General Assembly. We focused primarily on three buckets of bills. One set was the anti-community policing bills, which were, you know, IMPD takeover, getting rid of the use of force board and the general orders board, and just another use of force kind of policy that was basically saying that police officers didn't even have to adhere to a use of force policy. A lot of those bills have been killed or stopped or changed dramatically. The rioting bills, the anti-rioting bills, these bills generally were aimed, we felt, to chill protest. Most of them attempted to make it harder for folks to, they basically made it so that if you were arrested, you'd have to pay bail, you'd have to see a judge, you'd have to be in court. One of them, which was actually withdrawn, actually, you know, limited someone's ability to get to keep their job if they had a government job. That bill was withdrawn. But a lot of the other rioting bills, we think they've either died or are going to be killed. At least we're hopeful. The root cause bills is where we've really tried to put our attention. Root cause bills to us are issues like food insecurity, education, things that go beyond police reform and criminal justice reform. And in those areas, that's where our fight is. It was a tough session at the very, very beginning of the session because we had to deal with these bills and not know kind of what was going to happen. Right now, what we're really trying to do is take bills that were not heard. My understanding is only six bills from the Democratic caucus made it out of the House to the Senate. And so there's just a lot of good ideas that just weren't heard. And so that's really where our fight is. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. Elise, what are some of the things that the Latino caucus is working on?
Well, one thing that we have been asking for over a decade at this point, and that never seems to make it to even getting a committee hearing by the Republican supermajority, is driving cards for undocumented families, undocumented or mixed status families who work, pay taxes, contribute to our communities, but they take a risk every time they have to get behind the wheel to go to a child's doctor's appointment, to get groceries, to go to church, to go to work and contribute. A driver's card is something we've been asking for. We have, I want to center the work of the Undocumented Youth Alliance in Indiana. They have been doing work on this for years and years because it is their families who are affected by this. We've moved the needle. And I guess I would just say that along with the policies that all three of our groups are pushing, our communities can't be the only ones pushing policies that need to change in our communities where we're feeling the effects and the negative impact. If you are a part of any of our communities listening today, I hope that you are empowered, and I hope that you know you have a voice, and it is powerful. There is no one that is voiceless. But if you are not part of our community, especially if you are a white person, I hope you're listening, and I hope you're reflecting and learning about how you can help with these efforts, because we really need that type of active co-conspirator allyship happening. And that's the only way we're going to, or one of the most effective ways we're going to see some of these policies pass. It can't just be on our communities. It's everyone's issue.
I agree now, with Elise.
Oh, go ahead.
We need we like to use the term accomplices. Allies, we love allies because they make statements, and sometimes we need allies to make statements. But what we really need are accomplices, who are the co-conspirators, who actually do the action, do the work, do the learning and educating of themselves so that they can help us move forward.
Elise, you mentioned the driver's ID cards, and I know we're about to head to break soon, but why hasn't that gone through, or what is stalling it?
You know, that is a great question. We have done pretty much anything that a legislator would ask you to do. We've brought personal stories. We have talked to both Republicans and Democrats. We have talked to committee chairs. We have asked for summer study committees. We have multiple groups, both public and private, that have endorsed this type of proposal. But it is up to the Republican committee chairs to give this a hearing to get it on its way. And I know we're about to take a break. I could go on about this.
But we can continue back
up. Elaborate on that.
All right. We'll definitely pick back up on that after the break. It's very interesting. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking with leaders of organizations working to make changes in state government when it comes to equity, inclusion, and representation. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe, and we'll be back after a quick break. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. And just before the break, we were speaking with Elise Schrock of the Indiana Democratic Latino Caucus about the stall in getting driver's IDs for undocumented immigrants. We also are joined with Catherine Chi, organizer of the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum, and Marshawn Wally, public policy director for the African American Coalition of Indianapolis. Elise, let's get back to this discussion. What exactly is going on with these driver's IDs?
Sure. Thank you. Driver's cards, and we're careful to say driving cards, because that is really all this legislation would do. Currently, if you are an undocumented Hoosier, you are not afforded the opportunity to get a driving card, which makes it very difficult to get to work, to get to your faith organization, to take your kids to school. I mean, it's a huge issue, and it is something that a bill has been filed, I know at least for, I think, the last 10 years to provide this driving card to undocumented Hoosiers. And it has received support from insurance organizations, the Insurance Association, because when you're able to you would have to provide proof of insurance to get this card, just like anyone else. And that would bring down premiums for everyone. It would make our roads safer. And this is a workforce, especially, that is largely essential workers and is largely a community that keeps our state fed, keeps our state, especially during the pandemic, we saw how much we relied on this community in a number of different ways. And so it is frustrating that every year when a bill like this is authored, it can't even get a committee hearing. And especially this year when it has such broad coalition support from chambers of commerce, from the Insurance Association, from all these different groups. And yet something like a bill to get rid of gun permits that has practically no support and won't make us safer just flies through the legislature. It just goes to show you that it is a lack of priority. It is not that it can't be done. We can do big things. This legislature can do multiple big things at once. I have faith they can do that, but they need to see us, hear us, and help us.
Well, Catherine, Marshawn, feel free to jump in. Do you agree that they have the ability to pass these things? I mean, why does it take so long for things to get done?
I think it ends up being a matter of kind of like what Elise's referencing, educating the legislators. And it takes time. I know Representative Porter worked on hate crimes, I don't know, over 20 years. And it just, unfortunately, takes persistence and election cycles and maybe even, you know, the changing of chairs sometimes, or the ability to move an issue from one chair to a more friendly committee, that happens. I mean, I'm learning this year that, you know, you don't really want to see how the sausage is made, because it just sometimes just doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think what becomes important for organizations like ours, we have no permanent enemies, no permanent friends, only permanent interests. And so as long as we adhere to that, treat everybody you know, fairly, you got a fighting chance.
Now, I'm wondering if for some folks who aren't active in organizing or any of that stuff, just feel like this just sounds so complicated. How would you speak to them to get them to want to get on board, Catherine, for example, with the work that you're doing? How do you get people out in the community to come on board?
We've been pretty specific. I mean, you know, as you know, as I said earlier, we're fairly new. And right now we've been pretty specific about who we're reaching out to, because I think people are intimidated to get involved in politics because, for example, they don't see an Asian American represented in the state house. Or so mm-hmm. they are not thinking that, you know, oh, there's people out there who can advocate for my needs. So, I mean, that, so we're reaching out to, I mean, through this petition, one of the byproducts of this is that we have been able to reach out to various community leaders and kind of talk to them about this. I mean, this is pretty easy to understand. I mean, a hard topic, but an easy to understand topic for the Asian American community right now, because everybody has been talking about this. And just, you know, this is a way for us to begin talking about, you know, what we can do on a higher level to make changes. So that's our first step. And going forward, you know, like I said, we are still not sure what some of the issues facing the AAPI community are. And we're that's one of the NAPOF's long-term goal is to kind of, you know, find out what the landscape of the AAPI community in our state is, and then also, you know, kind of figuring out what some of the issues are. And this is also why, you know, number three on our petition is so important. We would like Governor Holcomb to establish a statewide advisory committee for AAPIs, because, you know, this doesn't exist in the state house right now. And this in various Midwestern states, they have this commission in the state house mm-hmm. where there's somebody in the state house who is directly communicating with community leaders to figure out what the needs are and bringing that to the governor, to the legislators, educating them on it. And one prime example I have for you is in Minnesota, they have this commission. And when everybody was worried about the anti-Asian hostility back in March of 2020, they were able to quickly establish a hotline and get all the resources and materials translated. And it was all over social media so that community members know what to do if they're faced with this type of hostility. And this is absolutely something that we would need right now in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Elise, what are your thoughts on getting community members involved?
I'm not going to lie. It is hard work, but it is inspiring work and it is empowering work. And it does take time. I mean, one example of how long this takes, but how fulfilling it is, you know, there was a senator, a former senator who was the architect of some incredibly damaging legislation for the Latino and Hispanic community in Indiana, passed some very Arizona style papers, please legislation back in around 2010. And then now Senator J.D. Ford stepped up to run against him. And he was not successful in the first run, but he came back at it again. And especially in his second run for that seat, he brought on Hispanic and Latino organizers into his campaign to speak specifically to the Latino population in his district. And that made a huge difference. And we were able to help pull him across the finish line. And now he is a sitting senator who is a co-conspirator in our work and who does value our voice. You know, up in Northwest Indiana, there was an open seat in District 12 for a House of Representatives seat. And, you know, when there's an open seat in a changing district, it's sometimes difficult to hold on to. It was for a lot of other folks in surrounding districts, but we had now Representative Mike Andrade, who is an incredible Latino representative for us. He's in his freshman year and is just doing already hit the ground running, is an incredible inspiration to our community. And he's in the state house doing the work. But most importantly, he is always looking out to make sure he's empowering other Latinos in the hallway, in the staff, and around state house adjacent areas. So it takes time, but it is so fulfilling. And it has to happen. Different perspectives have to be included in the way that we draft policy in our state for it to be effective for all Hoosiers.
And Marshawn, I'm going to ask you what I asked them, you know, why or what can you do to get folks to pay attention and want to get involved and not, I guess, not be so passive?
So I think the African-American political tradition is distinct. Like we've been fighting basically since slavery. And so some levels, there is a tradition of political engagement. While there's a tradition of political engagement, there's also a tradition of political disengagement as well. Sometimes. So like when you look at our churches, for example, some churches stay away from politics, some churches engage. For us, I think when you think about, you know, what's going on with the economics in our community, the physical death in our community and the spiritual death. So housing numbers, you know, we have the lowest home ownership rate. We have basically the highest median income gap. It's about $20,000. We have, you know, the highest unemployment rates. We have to. Someone in our community has to fight. And so there's always been organizations like the Urban League, Indiana Black Expo, the Concerned Clergy, members of the AACI, all of them, who basically push us and continue to push us to fight. And so I think it helps that we have organizations where that's just part of their DNA within our community. Mm-hmm. As far as recruiting other people, I think, you know, what we saw last summer where we had a multiracial gathering that supported, you know, the Black community and what was going on in police reform, I think that was heartening to see. And you're also seeing the corporate community respond in different ways. So for us, I think the community has been activated. Black Lives Matter has been a key part of that. It's just a matter of figuring out how to get folks to plug in. And so when we do protests or when we do, you know, petitions and things of that nature, we actually did a petition on the anti-community policing bills. We're trying to figure out ways to take the energy that's out here, the frustration that's out here, and to activate people. Also appreciating that there is a level of hopelessness and despair that we're also seeing as well. And so it's very much a challenge, but the upside is so necessary.
Well, speaking of this atmosphere of hopelessness and despair, what is something that I guess each of you could share that would be like the ideal solution or situation, you know, because we hear all of these things going on, all of these efforts, but what would be like your dream scenario at the end of the day?
I've been watching documentaries, so I'll jump in. I've been watching documentaries, and I want to say it was a gentleman named Smalls. It was during Reconstruction, and basically what he said was, we just want to be left alone and given the opportunity to have a fair fight in life. And what he's meant by being left alone was government actually attacking the Black community during Reconstruction. Right now, we operate in systems of systemic racism. And so there's systems, it's either benign neglect or, in certain instances, bills that are being aimed at the Black community or having disproportionate impacts on the Black community. So I'd like that to stop, the disproportionate impact. But then on the positive side, we're really banking on these root cause bills, food insecurity, training for healthcare workers, dealing with wages and living wages, rental, you know, dealing with landlord-tenant relationships, all these uphill mm-hmm. battles that, you know, we know are going to take some time, but we're going to be persistent.
Right, right. Catherine, is there something you're hoping, even if it's just one win out of this?
One win, I would say, is just for people to know that we're here, because I think in Indiana, I think we're one of the first organizations that is like that's coming out and say we're a political organization, you know, representing Asian American women and girls. And we want people to know that we're here and we're a resource for them and that we will be advocating for their issues. So, and also just for me to growing up in Indiana, to be in a group with other women, like-minded women, and, you know, doing this type of work is giving me a lot of hope. You know, we just organized in last spring, and, you know, we had our GOTV efforts in the fall last year, and we were able to reach out to hundreds of Asian American women in Indiana, and just listening to their stories and for them to know that we're out here supporting them is giving me a lot of hope. And just to hear that, you know, they appreciate it and they're glad that we're around. So I think there's a lot of work ahead of us, but I'm just, you know, glad that, you know, this, you know, we're here, and then, you know, we've got all these other wonderful organizations that's standing with us.
Awesome. Well, Elise, how about you?
Sure. I mean, I think at the heart of this, there is a lot of just racial reconciliation that needs to go on across the board. Biases that inform so many of the policies that we're talking about in the ways where they're not passed. I mean, what would help our community would also to see landlord-tenant agreements refined and to have housing access, food access. What would help our community would also be to see the governor acknowledge Asian American hate crimes, because acknowledging this type of behavior and how it helps disproportionate communities helps all of us. For the Latino community, we would love to see driving cards get passed, but we'd also like to see in-state tuition afforded to undocumented students. It all works together, but we have to do that reconciliation work.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much to all of our guests today, Catherine Chi, Marshawn Wally, and Elise Schrock. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brook. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow for a show on the future of working from home. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Soeb. Thanks for listening. This has been All In.